The AutJet Business Show is your gateway to expert business advice and real-world success stories. Each week, a different leader in the business world will share their tips, insights, and lessons, offering you practical advice to navigate your entrepreneurial journey. Whether you have a business idea or are just starting out or looking to elevate your existing business, the AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Ensure you get these transformative conversations live on Thursdays at 6 p.m. or find the podcast at highfm.com. Let's build your business empire together.
Welcome, welcome. It's that time of the week again. I'm David Zeidel. This is the AutJet Business Show. And this evening, we've got with us my cousin, Jeff Zeidel. And Jeff is a shopping center and property developer. So it's really a pleasure to welcome Jeff, my cousin, with us. He's a true titan of the South African property industry. And Jeff has had a distinguished career spanning over 50 years. He has quite literally helped shape the retail and property landscape in South Africa. Jeff's journey is a fascinating story of the entrepreneurial spirit, beginning with a lesson in customer service at his father's hardware store before he moved into the family's estate agency business. Over the decades, he has become a veteran of the industry, known for his astute leadership and his visionary outlook. He is a co-founder of Resilient and served for many years as the deputy chairman of the Johannesburg listed Fortress Income Fund. His influence extends far beyond boardrooms. Jeff is the past president of the South African Council of Shopping Centres and has been a driving force behind landmark developments in both rural South Africa and international markets, mostly in Eastern Europe. Many might not know that he was an early visionary in the expansion of the Nando's chain, helping them grow the brand and locations from just a few stores to over 100. He's also the winner of the 2010 APSA Jewish Achiever Award for listed companies. Jeff is highly regarded not just for his business acumen, but for his passion for mentorship and his commitment to advancing the property sector. So please join me in welcoming Jeff to the show. And Jeff, welcome.
Thank you, David. I hardly recognize myself there. Thank you.
And Jeff, just before we get to the interview with you, I always share a little bit of a business story beforehand. And I'm doing a series of the chapters from our book, Life on the Run, and this is chapter 10. And this says, believe that you will finish and have a vision and a dream. And it goes to the fact that if you believe you can, you're correct. If you believe you can't, you'll also be correct. And it's about having the belief in yourself that you can achieve what you set yourself to do. And it's interesting, Winston Churchill had a wonderful quote. He said, history will be kind to me because I intend to write it. And it's about having that faith that you can do it. And Zig Ziglar said, positive thinking will let you do everything better than negative thinking. And the lesson behind this is, think positively, think that you can do it, and then you will find a way of being able to do it. And there's a quote that I use often that says, you don't drown by falling in the water, you drown by not swimming once you've fallen in the water. We are all going to face hardships. We are all going to face things that it feels like we're drowning, but you save yourself by swimming, not by giving up. And that's the business lesson from me for tonight, but I'm looking forward to more business lessons tonight from Jeff. And Jeff, you know, you said that you started in business at a very young age when I think you were in grade, in that those days, standard 9, now grade 11. Just take us back to the beginning, and how did you start?
Okay, so what happened is, in fact, when I was in Standard 9, well, it's quite interesting. We both lived in Florida, and my parents bought a house in Emerentia, and they couldn't decide where to send me to school. So they decided, did I want a good social life or a good scholastic career? So off I went to Roosevelt. But I was playing soccer at Wanderers, and I moved across to Greenside, and I had a good social life and I think a good scholastic career. But the very next year, I was in Standard 9, and it was quite a crazy time, because what happened is we had the Zydel name in the West Rand was actually quite synonymous with property. So my late grandfather had been in the property industry for many years. David's father had a separate property business in Florida. And my father had a hardware business, but because people used to come into the hardware business and actually be talking about property and this, that, the other, they asked my mother to do a whole lot of stuff. So she opened up a third estate agency right next door to the shop. Now, we had an accountant by the name of Jonah Perkle, who was the accountant for all three of the businesses. My grandfather was getting old and starting to lose it a bit, so he was worried what was going to happen to the business. So he first went to David's father, Ronnie, who said he wouldn't touch her with a barge pole. Then he went to my mother, who said, no, I wouldn't be interested. But she said, but let me speak to Jeff. Now, I'm in Standard 9. So she said, look, I'll caretake it if you're interested. So I had to make a decision by the next morning. Up to that stage, I thought I was going to do law. My brother Ian is today a senior counsel, and that's the kind of path that I thought I'd be taking, although I had been quite interested in property and doing some renovations and whatnot before that. So anyway, I thought, well, let's do it. So that actually was the start of getting involved. So most Jewish mothers are looking for their sons to become doctors and accountants. There was my mother. We were going into business together. And the best decision that I ever made, which I was always happy about and appreciated in terms of that. And after I was finished the army and I did an overseas trip, I got stuck in and learned from the whole lot, from doing the account machines to the front office, back office, to renting, to we did it all. We had an estate agency that did residential sales and letting, management of flats and offices, and we had six agents that were working for us. Funny story here was that we had one that was a French fella, and he married a French woman, and she fell pregnant. And her parents had just emigrated to Australia. So they said, well, she wants to have the baby with her mother, and took all six agents with her. They all went to Australia. So anyway, so that was actually quite an interesting time in our lives. But I've always been blessed with very good support, family-wise. Well, got brought up in a really strong family-orientated home. My brothers Ian and Brian were, you know, we had a great childhood. I'm blessed that I've got an unbelievable supportive wife, Lynn. I've got amazing children. I've got amazing son-in-laws. And Sophie, Sasha, Blake and Harlow, you know, the apple of our eye. And we love them very much. And my mother-in-law, who stays probably 100 meters from the studio here, is going to be 98 in October.
Wow.
So, yeah. So I've been really blessed to get a nice, solid, good start and moved on from there.
So, Jeff, when you started in the normal real estate business, but then I know that you moved into shopping centers in way out places. Just take us through what was it about the shopping centers that attracted you and why way out? I think it was either Lesotho or it was in the Transkei, somewhere where you had to travel a long way.
So I was looking to do some type of developments in terms of there. But the big move and break happened. I was doing a deal with Pep Stores, and I needed them to go and sign off on whatever we were busy with. And I met up with this Anton Dean. He was he was based in Cape Town. He was the head of properties for Pepco. And I went into his office. It was like 8 o'clock in the morning. He was having the biggest fight screaming, shouting, "What do you mean the roof will be on next month? We were supposed to be trading 4 months ago. My ops guys are driving me mad." And he, you know, he was really giving this guy a piece of his mind. So when he put down the phone, I said, "What's all that about?" So he said to me, "Well, you know, the only people doing developments in Lesotho are the Indian guys. They don't want to borrow money. They promise the world. And if cash flow is not there, they're not looking to mess you around. But if cash flow is not there, they're not going to build." So the guy reckons maybe next month the roof will go on. So I said, "Is Lesotho an area, you know, in terms of retail?" He says, "Unbelievable." So I said to him, "Well, do you know of any sites?" So he says, "Matter of fact, I do." I fetched him 5 o'clock the next morning, and we shot off to Maseru. And in Lesotho, it's actually quite a strange thing. No one owns the land except the kingdom. So the king owns all the land. The influential and the church groups get allocated the land on a long-term lease, normally 60 years recurring. And we would then arrive, which we did here, and do a deal with the landowner, you know, the one that got allocated the first lease. And we would then build on the shopping center, rent it out. So you get a, you know, a lease, sublease, further sublease, and then a further sublease. But it all gets registered and all gets done, and it actually works out quite well. So we eventually landed up doing 10 various size shopping centers through Lesotho. I can tell you an interesting story. So Anton Dean, the guy that got me going on it, I eventually told him he's wasting time at Pep. And he joined me, and we were in, you know, partners just in our Lesotho stuff.
Is that called a pep talk?
Pep talk.
Literally a pep talk.
It was a pep talk. But, that was quite – so he came to join me, and it actually worked out quite nicely. So I wonder if I tell the story about when I – the first shopping center – I'll get – you know, maybe if we get time, I'll be talking about other stuff we've done. But we did a, you know, a sectional title in Florida that was quite amazing and made quite a lot of money out of that. And so I was sitting with cash. So the first shopping center I built in Lesotho, I was able to build for cash. And what I was looking to do is already lining up the next lot. We eventually wanted to cover the whole country. The reason why Lesotho is actually quite good is that the Lesotho miners are the miners that come back to the mines. The Mozambican, the South Africans, and anyone else go down for one, you know, contract. They say, never going to go under there again. The Lesotho guys kept coming back, and that was the advantage with that, because they then got the promotions. They became the dynamite guys and the shaft sinkers and all the rest of it. So going forward in terms of that, you know, that would made it quite good. And there was a deal done with the governments and the unions that a third got paid to the Lesothos in South Africa and two-thirds to their family. So that was an unbelievable opportunity where we could actually go all over Lesotho and, you know, to where people were staying and trying to do that. Okay.
So I think it's great that you're saying you saw where the money was, and therefore you followed where the money was and where the spend was, and there wasn't anything at the time.
Correct.
So I want to go through and talk about some
of... on that, just taking it in a South African context. You know, South Africa's quite amazing, good or bad, that we've got so many people on social spending. So it's exactly the same thing in South Africa, where you'll find out in these outlying areas, there's a lot of people there, maybe no jobs, but so everyone's got some money.
Great. So I want to pick up on what are those other opportunities, and you can go maybe into the rural areas, or I know you did something with Nando's, but we'll do that after the break.
Great.
The AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Let's build your business empire together.
Welcome back. I'm David Zeidel. You're listening to the AutJet Business Show. And we're talking to another Zeidel, my cousin Jeff Zeidel, and he's in shopping centers, and he's developed different shopping centers. And he was just mentioning beforehand moving to Lesotho. And he moved to Lesotho because he was talking to somebody from Pep Stores and they had an issue. And Jeff, having known you, I think that's one of your keys to success is there's an issue and you think, how can I help and solve that issue? And you're not scared of getting in the car and going to Lesotho, and then you started setting up these different centers. What other opportunities, and maybe if you in the back of your mind eventually talk about the Nando's opportunity,
yeah.
What other opportunities like that did you see and did you take advantage of?
Well, we used to see, I've always believed in low-hanging fruit. The other thing that I also believed in when we were looking to do developments and, get into developments and changing and doing whatever, is getting out and about. I didn't want to compete with large corporations and large companies, property companies, that, that center, they're basically only in the urban areas. They don't like to travel an hour out of their office. So we realized that it was just so open. If you actually went out there, you could actually be able to do a string of things with that others that weren't doing because they didn't actually want to get out and about. And then getting to the Nando's, so eventually with all the developments, and we were doing Lesotho, and we were doing quite a lot in other places as well, but coming back to my office, this is the days before cell phones, the days before all the rest of it. I'd come back to my office and there were like four pages of messages. And we had an incredible staff. And there was, but our business was so personalized. So, a guy that owns a block of flats would phone me up. I'm not there. I said, I'll be back in a day. I said, okay, tell him to phone me. When I phoned him, he wanted to ask something, about the caretaker. And he could have spoken to four people in my office and would have known. I had to find out from them anyway. So we eventually sold that business because it became too personalized. And I needed to do a whole lot of more developing and things like that. So once I sold that business, I never called anything retiring, but it was like a retread. I like to retread. And I'm not scared of change. Anyway, so working, looking where the opportunities and whatever, and I took an office in Hyde Park Shopping Center, and I shared offices with a whole string, and the whole Brosen family were there. Nando's were starting. Their office was right at the end, and they were just starting. And there were a string of guys that were sharing offices, and we were like the first, now it's the rage, to have these offices that... you've got one receptionist that's doing that. Well, we did that a long time ago. Anyway, the Nando's guy, I used to go to them very often and say to them, but hold on a second, I can see that these guys are developing there. Why aren't you going into that center? And why aren't you doing that? And then they had other problems like removing building line restrictions, which they thought was, there was no problem doing. And yet, they were employing people who couldn't start working yet because waiting for those things to happen. So Robbie approached me, and we came up with, I certainly wasn't the driving force, whatever, but I got very involved with regard to their expansion. I was heading that part up, and I got them from four stores to, I think it was 120. But I had some of the best fun of my life during that period because I knew from all sides. I knew how much the developer of a shopping center would pay to get a tenant like Nando, which was becoming and did become, the absolute flavor of the month. They all wanted Nando's. So I had such fun. I mean, we would get the landlords to pay us to get in and free rental forever. And we really had a good time. And I was very close to all the Brosens, very close to Max Brosen, which I did quite a lot of other stuff with later on. But even to this day, I'll get on to one of the things we've done that I've done subsequently to all the listed where we bought Balfour Park Shopping Center. One of my partners is Jonty, together with the Brosens and the Bermans. But, the link with the Brosens carries on. And let me tell you, Robbie's an amazing fellow. The people were total awe of him those days. I gave prizes out at one of the heads to all the staff, and I was looking at them all coming up there, and I said, I said to myself, if Robbie said jump, they would have just jumped, not even thinking about it. So anyway, that was a really interesting time that we had there. But what happened then was that looking to see what else is happening out there. So one of the interesting things going on is that the listed property sector was very mundane in South Africa. It really was nothing really happening there. I was doing other stuff, and I was borrowing money from Nedbank and Investec. But at Nedbank, the one fellow there, I knew him from years before, Des de Beer. And he had been friendly with the guy from the army, Barry Stuller. And we started talking and saying, but hold on a second, there must be something we can do. Des wanted to leave the bank, and we can see what we can do. So we were thinking initially about going on a listing. But just before that, what happened is we said, how about we do a mezzanine fund with Nedbank? And we got Nedbank quite excited about it. It wasn't all done yet, but we were far down the line. And I was on holiday in Phuket on the 20th of December 2001. The reason why I remember the 20th of December, it's my twin's daughter's birthday. And the rand had collapsed. Currency had gone totally out of sync. Just about the who's who of Joburg business was there. You can't believe it. And everyone was just waiting for more news, more news. I came up with a solution. I said, listen, we're not going to solve any problems because it was collapsing by the minute. I said, let's go on the beach and get drunk. And that seemed to be a very popular solution there. But when I got back, the idea of a mezzanine fund didn't make sense because you now were going to be highly geared. Interest rates were up. It just didn't make sense. So we were saying, but hold on a second. How can REITs, which is a real estate investment trust, which means just listed property, property that gets bought and sold, the shares on the stock exchange. How can it be so popular and flying in Australia, in New Zealand, a little bit, but Canada, America, it just didn't make sense. Why not here? So that's when we started looking at that seriously. And a year later, on the 6th of December 2002, we listed Resilient on the Joburg Stock Exchange with a market capitalization of 440 million.
And that led to you now getting involved in properties in South Africa, shopping centers in South Africa, and then even listing or buying shopping centers around the world. I know it's in Poland and in Romania.
Okay.
But before we get to that, I want to find out from you just a little bit around the economics of shopping centers. So we go into shopping centers and we just shop there. What are the economics behind it? And just as you mentioned a little bit earlier about Balfour Park, you kind of just slipped that in. But that's something brand new that you've just got involved in Balfour Park, and it's going to change. So you're looking at Balfour Park. It's not performing. Not necessarily Balfour Park itself, but let's take any other shopping center. Just take us through, how do you take a new shopping center? I've heard the term anchor tenants. I've heard people getting rent for next to nothing initially. Just take us through, how would you take a center? Or first of all, why would you say a center has potential? And then how do you get the tenants in and how do you make it profitable?
The last thing you ever want to do when you're a property developer is begging tenants to come in. So you actually got to make it conducive that they actually want to come in. So this year is going to be the year of work. I bought it with the Berman brothers and Jonty and the Brosens. And we decided initially that we were going to do it all on our own. But then we decided we really wanted to go a lot bigger and really make it into something special. And I honestly believe next year when we have the official openings and all the rest of it, that it will trade in the meantime. But the kind of new tenants we're going to bring in, the dynamism we're going to bring there, the change, the look, the feel, the access, sorting out how it works with transport, and just everything we're looking at that's going to make a world of difference. But all of a sudden, just having the foresight, the story, where we're going and with this, that, the other, there's been a massive demand from tenants, massive. So we know that we're on the right track there. The other thing is that I'll tell you an interesting story where we think that South Africans, for argument's sake, so we take the grocer or the supermarket, they call them grocers in America, the supermarkets in South Africa. We take them, that they're in every shopping center, and we take that almost for granted.
Is that what's termed an anchor tenant?
Anchor tenant.
And so the purpose of an anchor tenant is that
to draw the feet.
So a lot of people come in, and therefore it's attractive to other shops to be there because people are coming.
Yeah. Okay. Correct. So if we take a Resilient, for instance, now Resilient, straight away we decided we're going to become non-metropolitan, okay, and we want dominance of shopping centres. And the dominance means that we don't want another shopping centre to open across the road. So supermarkets are traditionally the worst people, because what they'll do is they're only really interested in themselves. So they would go to another developer and open across the road. So all of a sudden now you split the market. Mm. So we started doing a situation that we'd have at least three anchor tenants in every center. So we definitely always have two grocery stores. We would have the Woolworths, we'd have Macro with their food, or whatever, and, we would have that type of situation. So dominance became important. Now, to tell you an interesting story where we think South Africans are a bit removed and that we can only learn from America and all the rest of it. So one of the things that I got appointed onto was the World Board of the Council of Shopping Centres. Okay, and we used to have board meetings regularly, and it's quite an interesting one. They won 3 years commitment from you, and after that you have to do nothing but get invited to everything. So board meetings is a lot of people, and it really is the doyen of American property that's there. I was the only African that was there, but one or two from it. But like everything else in America, if they have the baseball championship, it's called the World Series. So with regard to this, so we had a board meeting, and we have a breakaway session. Anyway, so the day before, I had a lunch with probably, I would say, 200 or 300 of the top shopping centers in America. The guys around that table were, the main guys in terms of that. And I said to them, I can't actually understand. In the old, with the way that the American shopping centers were, that it would be a rectangular design on the four corners, if it's one level. They would have four of the departmental stores. And if it was double level, then they would have more. I mean, so in the old days, that worked like a charm. But departmental stores are changing in nature. And they were there on long leases, low rentals, all the rest of it. And a whole lot of them, I mean, in the year I was talking about that, I think Target had closed 150 stores. And I'm saying, well, why aren't you proactive? Why don't you come to them and say, we can see you're not trading, get out there and put in the grocer. Okay, now up to that, well, it's still in America if anyone's traveled there, you'll see the grocers are really very, very well sited. They like to have convenience. So there'll be a strip mall with easy driving in and out. On the way home, it's straight in. The mess of the parking is in front of the supermarket. Then the center, it comes out from that, and that's where they've been, and that's where, they're like. So I said to these guys, why don't you get into the shopping centers? I'm not saying they've got to close the convenience ones, but you control everything. You control the budget, the shopping center, the parking, everything. Anyway, and they all look at each other, and they say, no, they don't want to be here. So anyway, by absolute,
so they said the grocers don't want to
be in don't the want to be in their shoppings. Yeah, don't want to be in the shopping centers. That's what
they
want.
They'd rather be standalone.
That's what their thing is. Absolutely, for shit, but it was like crazy. the next day we have the board meeting, and one of the people that was going to do one of the breakaway sessions had got ill a day or two before that. And the grocers had asked to give a presentation, speak to the REIT owners and the shopping centre owners, just to say, listen, we've got click and collect is now becoming a big thing. We now need to plan that. We want to show you what our ideas are and how we're going to be handling it. And then we need to change also some of the internal of the store. So they phoned them the day before and they said, listen, if you're interested, we've got a slot tomorrow. Every grocer was represented there. Okay, and we had this thing with a long boardroom table and I stuck myself right opposite them. They were all sitting together. And as though everyone was about to start, I said, sorry, can I just check on something? I said, I cannot believe, right, that you guys aren't in shopping centres. All these guys have got the shopping centres. They control everything, the budget, the parking, the whole situation, right? I said, I come from the tip of Africa. Probably the last 10 or 12 shopping centres we developed, we had at least two food tenants, you know, grocers. And we then went to Romania and Poland and Eastern Europe. We didn't put supermarkets in there. We put hypermarkets, okay? And if you go to the UK and if you go to Australia, I said, I can't actually understand. I love your concept of the convenience, but why are you not there? And they look at each other and said, they don't want us.
So both sides were blaming the other side for not being in
so
there.
So I looked and I said to them, there's a disconnect here. Anyway, we went to the main session and became an hour's discussion with everyone about what was going on there. And they eventually were going to have some kind of paper written, research. Crazy. So you realize that actually, you know, we actually got things in South Africa retail. It's quite amazing.
So it's about spotting those opportunities.
Correct.
So getting back to the local market.
Yeah.
Just explain, let's say you've got a shopping center, there's no one in it, or you're thinking of doing a shopping center, let's say out in Zinin.
Okay.
Some rural place. How do you decide if that is a good spot, and then how do you fill it up with tenants?
You're jogging my memory nicely here, David. I won't tell you about Zinin, where we developed three shopping centres, but what I will tell you is about Petersburg or Polokwane. Okay? So that area was the last area, major area in South Africa, that didn't have a regional shopping centre. And just about every single retailer wanted to be there in a regional centre, and every developer was looking to go there. So what we did is we got offered a great site just where Mall of the North is. That's the centre that we eventually did develop. But we could get hold of the land. We were a bit worried that it was too close to the highway, that roads department or someone would come. So we took an option on the piece next to it. Then we looked at every possible opportunity in the whole of Petersburg, and we took an option on three other sites that we thought could work, but this is the one we wanted. What we did then is we flew all the retailers up to Petersburg. We got into two combis. I was in one, and Johan Krik, who's the CEO of Resilient Today, was in the other. And we took them to all of them, but obviously wanted to convince them that this is the one we liked. And they all loved it. We had total commitment from everyone. That was game, set, and match. Because no one could come with any other development when they were party to actually getting, decision to go in there. We eventually brought in Flanagan and Gerard and the Moormans, in minor shares within it, because they were looking to do something. We thought they could delay it, and we worked well with them.
So I want to get more into that and just find out how did you then eventually tenant it up, and how do you work the pricing? And I know there are things that people talk about, turnover clauses, and maybe if we can get a little bit into that.
Great.
But we'll do that after the break.
The AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Let's build your business empire together.
Welcome back. You're listening to the AutJet Business Show, and you're listening to Two Zeidels. I'm David Zeidel, and I'm busy interviewing Jeff Zeidel, my cousin, who's in shopping centers and talking about the development of that. But quite a few things that Jeff has mentioned so far is in terms of being successful is, number one, look for the low-hanging fruit, meaning don't go for things that are too complicated. Look for the things that seem easier. And then get out and about. Jeff would get in his car and travel to different places that others would not do. It's things that people see that are dangerous or not really dangerous, but it's difficult to do. That's what you took on something, and it's unique to you, that's different to what others would do. And not to be scared of change, and take the chance. Go for it. So those are some of the things that you were mentioning. But just before the break, you were just talking about the shopping centers. Yeah. And how, you, first of all, you got everybody involved so that you have the buy-in. And then when you start tending it up, who do you get first? Who do you get second? And just some of the terminology that we've heard of, but maybe we're not sure about it.
Okay, well, let me tell you an interesting thing about the South African retail market. So if you know the Fashini Group, they've got 39 different brands, okay? So if you've got Fashinis that's very excited about the shopping center, it's a matter of you choosing which ones you can fit in there in terms of their Truworths 15, Pick and Pay 6, Pepcor 30.
Are these 30
ShopRite
different eight. Types of companies within the group?
Within the group.
Wow.
Okay. So, you know, say if you took the ShopRite, it'd be Checkers, you save this at the other, and if you take Fashini, they've got the string. With taking Mall of, you know, of the North, which was, if I remember correctly, I think 79,000 square meters that we were developing. We got the bulk of that just from the yays of two guys, the guys in two combis.
Wow.
You know, that the rest was filling in with locals and, you know, some of the franchise stores and whatever. So most important always to get, in South African context, to get the supermarket in. The supermarket normally, well, we try and get them onto quite a good turnover clause. So if they're doing well, they're going to pay more. And I'll explain to you how that turnover clause works. And then the rest of the tenants around them, even though that they might be paying a lower rental in the supermarket, would be paying because the supermarket's bringing in the feet. So they would get the feet there, and they can afford then, you know, the jewelry shops and the clothing shops and whatever to get that.
So you would give the supermarkets, they have a bigger space, but they pay a lower rent. And then besides the rent, they actually pay on top of it, it's almost like a double rent, a turnover clause. So
Whichever's the higher.
Okay.
So it's quite an interesting one. So what happens is their different categories would be paying at different levels, could be as low as, you know, 1.5% going up to 15% of turnover, you know, with the ones that got very high markups but low turnovers.
So that means 15% of your sales amount.
So every shopping centre in South Africa, even if they don't have the tenant on a turnover clause, would get their turnover anyway. That's one of the things in the lease, so that the guys running the center can work out, is Homeware doing well? Is this need assistance? Is this good? Is that bad? And then deciding to keep ahead of the game in terms of that.
So I was going to ask, how do you know what their turnover is? And they have to disclose it to you.
They have to disclose. And once they've got an actual turnover clause, the lease gets quite hairy with them, that it can be audited. They've got to, you know, they've got to send an audit certificate. And if, you know, the landlord didn't believe it, he could get it checked out. But let me give you a practical example of this. So it's whichever's the higher, okay? So you've got your base rental and whatever, and your turnover would be multiplied out. And if that's higher than what that rental is, that you in fact get paid in terms of that. Just as a side thing, I'd like to tell you a story about Hyde Park. But just before I say that, in Maseru in Lesotho, at one stage I had 5 PEP stores within 1 kilometre. Okay, and each one of them were paying me double the rental than what their base rental was.
Because of the turnover.
Wow. Then I'd be doing something else, and they would want to go in there. And I'd say, there's no point. Why would I want you to put in there? You're paying turnover rental here. You're going to take it away from there.
Hmm.
So they'd say, no problem. We'll bring that rental up to where it should be, and we'll put this one there. And even though this one might be diagonally across the road, in no time, they were also doing amazingly well. But just, an example of how it's quite amazing. Everyone, I think, knows Hyde Park Shopping Centre. Now, that was the first shopping centre within the good old Transvaal that got developed, air-conditioned, and escalators, and the whole story. One day, I think it was Tradegrow, which was taken over later by Momentum. They came to the sellers there, and they wanted to buy the shopping centre. But they really didn't want to look after it. They actually were quite keen on doing a head lease, which means that the seller actually signs a lease and they only send one check. So they get paid out for the building, but they enter into a lease agreement that they're liable on. And they thought they were quite clever at Tradegrow. They could get that. So they did a 75-year head lease, which is an extraordinary length of time. But those days, escalations, now in South African context, we always had high inflation. So escalations came in, and that was always, always, always an annual increase. And it ranged, from 3% and went as high as 15% at one stage. At the moment, it's around about 6 or 7%. But it wasn't standard. Those days, it was very similar to what happened in the UK. Your rental was the same for about 3-4 years and then went up a little bit, and there would be a whole discussion over the increase. And turnover rentals was something that just started in America. And everyone laughed. That will never work here. Anyway, so when they signed that head lease, they didn't take into account anything with regard to escalations annually as well as turnover rentals. To cut a long story short, that came in big time, and when the building eventually got sold to Hyprop, who now today still own it, they went to Metropolitan to buy it, and Metropolitan says, no, we own the building, but we don't own the head lease. The sellers sold the building for a second time, and they got more for it than Hyprop got for the physical property.
Wow.
That's how much the turnover rental and the escalations are gone.
Oh, that's interesting. So I want to get to your personal philosophy around life and business, but we need to take a quick ad break.
The AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Let's build your business empire together.
Welcome back. You're listening to the AutJet Business Show. I'm David Zeidel, and we're busy talking to Jeff Zeidel about the shopping centres. And Jeff, you've had such a broad experience. I just want to find out from you, have you got some personal philosophy that you follow and that maybe we can follow what you're following?
Well, David mentioned that he was going to ask me this, so I made down a couple of notes. So I'll read through them very quickly. Embrace partnerships. Never burn bridges. Be focused.
Wait. Before you read them out, just let's go back each one and let's just. I want to see what you mean by that. So the first one is embrace
partnerships. I've always had partners. I've had the most amazing partners, and you need to create synergies to make 1 and 1 equal 3. I'm good at some things, not good at others. You get people that are good at others, and you put it together, and you've now got 1 and 1 equal 3.
Okay, fantastic. And then your next one.
Okay, never burn bridges. Be focused.
What do you mean, never burn bridges?
Well, even there's no need at the end of the day, even if, you leave something, whatever, leave with a bad taste in the mouth. Rather, you know, rather keep it up. You never know when you're going to work together with someone or do something together. So I don't like this thing of having foibles and problems. And so try to get never burn bridges.
Never
so
burn bridges. Great. Your next one?
Okay, be focused, have a goal.
Okay, what do you mean by that of focused and have a goal?
You know, know what you're going to be doing. So if you are going to be developing the shopping center and you are going to concentrate on that, get making sure that you've got whatever you need to get in there, but be focused on that. Nothing, leave nothing to chance. Get stuck in, have the goal, be it that the time you're going to be opening, what you want to get out of it, whatever the thing is, but you've actually got a goal going forward.
Okay.
Don't be afraid of change. You mentioned that. I really do believe that. And don't. And the one that I love the most is worrying doesn't help. I don't like this. So if everyone around is worrying, right, I want to do something about it. And if I can't, if it's something that's bigger than what I can do about it, and everyone else is worrying, I let them worry. I'm not going to worry about something I can't do something about.
So you saying? So I know that some people, when they worry, they think the worrying is helping. They think just by worrying, then you're
doing
it.
Makes it worse.
And you're saying no. You're saying don't worry about it. Do something about it.
And if you can't, well then you can't.
Yeah.
So or if you're going to be worrying about it, it's going to drive you mad and everyone around you mad. So rather let someone else worry.
How do you not worry?
I don't know. well, if I can't do something about it, you know.
Then let it go.
But I will try and see if there's something that, you know, it's still there in the back of my mind, but I'm not going to have sleepless nights over it.
So the opposite is true as well, is that if you were going to worry, well, then you do something about it. And that's, that's amazing. Right, your next one?
The other one is never turn away when you get offered something. Check it out, have a look and see it. Okay, I recently bought three buildings in King Williamstown that are offices let to government and provincial government. And if you'd ever asked me before, I would have said, hate offices, hate government leases, hate provincial government. But the deal made sense and did it. So that's the other one. Empower your staff and incentivize them. Let them really feel that they're part of it and that they get the benefits. And always align yourself with your partners and shareholders. Be in the same position that they are. No different.
So that means whoever you're working with, you've got to be chasing the same goal.
Same goal. And within the partnership that you make decisions, you make it not for yourself, you make it for the partnership. So the same thing, you aligned, you know, that you actually can do that. I always look at if a deal's too complicated and you can't put it all down in the back of an envelope, it's not worth doing. You're now forcing the issue. So if it doesn't work, it doesn't work.
Okay.
Okay.
And those are your rules. And then I know you've been involved with NEPI, Rowcastle.
Yep.
Do you want to just talk a little bit around that?
Okay, so I'll just tell you quickly. So out of Resilient and a couple of other companies that we had, we formed Fortress. And prior to that, we started in Romania with NEPI Rockcastle, which today is the biggest shopping center and property company in the whole of Central and Eastern Europe. Very proud of them. They've grown massively. They're by far the biggest property company listed on Joburg Stock Exchange, plus they're on Amsterdam Stock Exchange. They got 60 shopping centres. They got 60 shopping centres, and last year's footfall was 339 million people came through those shopping centres.
Wow, that's amazing. So you're making a difference locally and worldwide.
And we've run out of time, so I was going to tell you all about Poland, but we can't get there.
Okay, so maybe we'll do another one. So I just want to sum up very briefly, because I think these life philosophies are quite important. So number one, to be successful, Jeff says, you need to find partners and have the right partners. Together with that, you've got to align with those partners. You've got to be both chasing the same goal, not different goals. And even with that, along with that, is never burn bridges. So never never leave that bad taste, or what we're famous for is the Faribles. So never have the Faribles. Be focused on what you're doing. Know what your actual goal is and be focused on it. Don't be afraid of changing if change is needed. And very crucial for me, what I heard from you is worry doesn't help. So if you can do something, or if you're worried about something, rather than just worrying, actually do something about it. And look at all opportunities. So if opportunity arises, don't just randomly turn it around or turn it away. Look at it. And also empower your staff. Let them be part of the whole trip. And finally, you said that if a deal is too complicated, then you need to walk away, because it needs to be simple and understandable. So, Jeff, besides your whole life story, and I think these personal philosophies have been unbelievable, and I'm going to look at these in terms of my life and see which ones, if I can, and maybe even all of them, I'll try and incorporate it. And if I don't, I'm not going to worry about it.
I
just want to, first of all, thank Craig for running the show. Craig, thank you very much for that. Jeff, thank you for being here. Thanks for sharing your story and your philosophy. I'm David Zeidel, and this has been the Orchard Business Show.
Thanks for having me.